Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Hi, this is Pat Sloan for American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I have got four great guests today, and we're going to get right to it here with Michelle May. If you have not gone over to the Raspberry Rabbits, which, you know, who wouldn't love a site with the name Rabbits in it? I do, and her designs are so adorable. She works in wool. And today, Michelle's going to tell me a lot about the kind of techniques that she does and some tips about working with wool. Thanks for being here, Michelle.
Hi, Pat. Thanks so much.
You know, you have a long history of working in textiles. When did you start working with wool applique?
Well, I guess it was about 3 or 4 years ago now. I have been a quilter for over 25 years. Love it.
Yay.
And, you know, it's like you make a bunch of, you know, bed quilts and wall quilts and all that kind of thing. And I guess I just kind of decided to start making some art quilts and stuff like that. So then all of a sudden I found wool and kind of was like, oh, this stuff is really great. And it's fun to applique with it because you don't have to turn under edges and it cuts mm-hmm. really nice. And so I kind of just fell into it that way.
You know, I think that a lot of people, Michelle, do the same thing. When you touch wool and you cut it and you find out how easy and forgiving it is just like head over heels, right?
It is. It really is. It's so much fun to work with. It's just got such a great texture, and I think it adds a lot of dimension to a quilt as well. You know, you can mm-hmm. do lots of layering and then, you know, put some different textures on it.
All right, so before we talk wool, you have to tell me how you got the name Raspberry Rabbit, or why you have that.
Well, I'm known as the crazy bunny lady. I've been infatuated with bunnies since I was 6 years old, and I have rescue rabbits, Harrington and Hannah. They write on my blog a lot, too. They have a huge following, and they live in my studio. And so pretty much everybody knows me by the, you know, bunnies and that. And way back, I guess it was in 98, a friend of mine did a painting for me, and it was the Raspberry Rabbit's Tea Room. And I was like, oh, I love that. You know, if I ever have a business one day, I'm going to name it that. And so that's where it came from.
Well, your actual drawings of rabbits are so delightful. I mean, I look at your drawings of your critters and I'm like, oh my gosh, I want to make that. You have such a cute style.
It's just fun. And, you know, it's folk art style, so you don't have to be like Van Gogh or Rembrandt. It comes from your heart. You know, when you do folk art, it's totally something that just comes out of your heart.
Yeah, I agree. It's my favorite style. I always say that, you know, we let the shapes do the talking. You know, you fill it with some stuff, but really it's those nice, big, soft shapes and not a lot of detail. Super cute. Let me have you describe a little bit about what your patterns are right now, because you also have a book, which we'll talk about, but describe, you know, they're smaller, and are they wool on wool? Are they wool felt? What are they?
Well, it's a method I came up with that kind of hit me one morning out of the blue. It's called Folk Art Fusion. And so what it is, it's like the fun and whimsy of folk art fused together with the freedom of making an art quilt. So the projects are smaller and mostly like something you would frame and hang on the wall, or a pillow or a table topper or something that's smaller, not necessarily a bed quilt, more of an art quilt. Mm-hmm. And what I do is I specialize kind of my technique with folk art fusion. It's reverse wool applique. And then I'm known for my floating borders. So like I'll make like little quilts and then like put the little quilts together with a border of wool. And the wool is dimensional that I put on it. And so it's kind of neat to work. Sometimes I'll put, it'll be wool on wool, or a lot of times I'll put the dimensional pieces on a cotton background, because I still, you know, being a quilter, you just can't get away from fabric.
No.
And so I like to put, I'll put the wool on the fabric sometimes and then quilt the background to it. It really just depends kind of, you know, what the pattern says to me when I draw it. It's kind of, you know, you start auditioning fabrics and wools, and it kind of leads itself to what you want to do with it.
So since I'm an appliqueer also, when I hear reverse applique, you know, I'm thinking in the world of cotton, and it's a particular type of technique. It has edges that are turned under, but you don't have turn under edges with your wool, do you?
No, it's really easy. And so, yeah, I use fusible web. I do love a fusible web to keep all the layers together.
Oh, okay.
And plus it's easy, you know, for me, it's easy to cut out, you know, once I trace the pattern on the web and put it on the, I use wool felt most of the time.
Okay.
National Nonwovens, I like their blend because it has a little more texture to it. And when you're doing reverse applique like that, you need to be able to cut these fine little pieces out. And 100% wool I'll use for like just a little bit of embellishment on top, like to applique it on top.
Okay.
But the blend, when you're cutting out for the pieces, just kind of cuts a lot nicer than it would if you were using the other.
So explain to me what, with a blend, I know there's several different formulas, you know, like a percentage of wool versus a percentage of something else. What do you like to work with?
I work with the, it's 65% rayon and it's 35% wool.
Okay.
Is the blend that I use most of the time. Unless, you know, some of them, there's also one that's like 20 wool, 80 rayon. And I'll use that one if it's got the color I'm after. But they work really nice. And again, it's not like this is, you know, it's an art quilt mostly. So I'm not worried about it, you know, having to launder it or anything like that. So
now with the, in the past, I haven't used a blend for a little while. So explain to me how you prepare it, because they used to be very flat. Like when you bought it on the bold, it was very flat. And some people liked it to be very flat and other people wanted texture. So they had to, you know, wash it ahead of time. What do you do?
I just use it. I buy it by the bolts or in sheets, and I use it pretty much just like that because I do so much hand stitching. I'm a designer with Val Danny. I never say it right because I'm a Southerner and it comes out Val Danny. But I work with their variegated threads, and I like to add the texture to the wool with the stitching. And so I do like primitive running stitch and just little embellishments like that. So that's kind of how I add the texture and dimension to the wool.
Ah, okay. So that's really nice to know, because a lot of times people will buy that on the bolt and then think they have to do something with it, but yours doesn't. And I like how it looks that way.
Yeah, it kind of gives it it's just a really neat look. You can just, and it's easy. You just get it and cut it and go with it. So
yeah. Now, do you ever use, I like to call it found wool, you know, like clothing or blankets or things like that?
I have not. I think, you know, I see a lot of the groups now, the couple Facebook groups and stuff that the gals go in and they find all this great stuff and thrift stuff in the thrift stores. Mm-hmm. But here, you know, I'm in Eastern North Carolina, and it's like there's no wool in the thrift stores. So I guess I just don't ever go looking for it because you just don't find it around here.
Well, that would make sense. Yeah, there wouldn't be any point looking for it if you're pretty sure they don't have it.
Yeah.
So are your pieces washable when they're done?
They could be if you needed to wash them for something, but most of the time they're decorative, so I don't really wash them. I might take some of the bigger pieces outside and let them air out if they need that, or I'm a queen of of keeping lint rollers around the house with bunny fur and hay dust from that. So I lint roll everything, but they really don't need to be washed.
That's really nice to know, because sometimes people get like very concerned, you know, oh, it's wool, you know, what am I going to do with it? So tell me, your book is self-published?
Yes, I did that. I wrote my book 2 years ago. Carol Ann Waugh is a wonderful fiber artist and author, and she's my mentor, and she kind of encouraged me to write my book and, you know, talk about my folk art fusion and that kind of thing. And that was a huge undertaking and a big adventure. And but it's done really well. There's 10 projects in the book. And I also travel around and I teach, you know, the project from the books and some of my other patterns too. So it's lots of fun.
So people can find all of this, like, you know, all of your stuff, and then how to contact you at the website, right?
Yeah. There's links to my blog. There's, I have, you know, my shop is on there. I sell my patterns and supplies and kits, even complete kits out of shop, and my book. My book's on Amazon too. I sell off the Amazon with it. And,
Super. So that's called, you are at The Raspberry Rabbits, because there's more than one rabbit.
Correct, because there's Harrington and Hannah. If I left one off, they'd be sad.
they would be very sad. So tell me what you're currently working on. We have like about 30 seconds.
I am working on some new projects, some new class projects that are going to be coming out this summer. There's one with a pumpkin. I've got one with a seahorse in it, Seymour the seahorse. He collects seashells. So usually all my designs have some kind of story attached to them.
That sounds like so much fun, Michelle. You are amazing.
Oh, thanks, Pat. Thanks so much. I love what I do.
Well, it sure everybody can tell, and I appreciate you coming on.
Well, thanks so much for inviting me. I appreciate it.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about some color and digital, and we'll see you then.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
The 1 million pillowcase challenge is hitting the road. Come sew with the staff of American Patchwork and Quilting magazine at the Sewing and Stitchery Expo in Puyallup, Washington, February 26th through March 1st of 2015. Everything needed to make the pillowcases will be available for free. Pillowcases will be donated to the children being treated at Mary Bridge Children's Hospital. Stop by the Showplex and use your sewing skills to help a good cause. If you can't stay to make a pillowcase, no worries. Drop off your completed pillowcase to add to the total. See you there.
Reaching out from the heartland of the United States with quality programming, this is TokiNet Radio.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Well, Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I wanted to catch up with Amanda Murphy. She does fabric design. She does digital embroidery. She's an author. She has amazing books and a really, really wonderful style. And I wanted to talk about her newest book, Color Essentials. So, Amanda, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Pat.
You know what? When I saw this book, I was like, oh, you know, this is really neat, because I open up the books. I try not to think too much about them until I, you know, get a glance through them. And I'm not generally like an all solid person, but this book is exciting. I mean, there are no prints in here, and I love it. What made you decide?
Well, thank you.
Yeah. What made you decide to work with just solids?
Well, you know, I love color in general, and I think when you work with solids, you're really forced to look at color and how it's affected by color surrounding it. In a way, I love prints, because then you get unexpected surprises that happen because you're using so many colors all at once. But when you're working just with solids, it can become a much more theoretical thing. And so I was inspired to write a book that was part color theory, but part quilting, very much influenced by graphic design, I guess.
You know, that is really neat, because you take away when you take away the pattern, doesn't it take away some of the decisions in a way? People get like caught up. Oh, the pattern has a bike on it, so I can only use it for this. Do you ever hear that?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think just playing with color on its own, It really forces you to think about how it's going to function in space. And color is such a relative thing. Depending on the surrounding colors, it can look totally different. And that's something I did a lot I guess that comes out of my design background. You know, we talked about that a lot in school. And I think quilters have an intrinsic sense of that without even realizing it, because they play with fabric so much. But I kind of wanted to write a book about that in isolation.
You know, that is true. People know, don't you just know down in your gut? I mean, a lot of quilters, yeah, they're just like, no, they're looking at it and they're like, yeah, or like, no. I mean, but they don't know why. And your book
that comes
it's like you have reasons why you know that. And there are reasons, there are ways to explore it and make it more in depth. One of the things that I loved was how it's laid out. Can you just give us a little brief on sort of like the flow of the book?
Yes. Well, you know, it explores color through fabric. So one of the most important things in marketing this book was to have the availability for both shops and consumers to buy fabric affordably in lots of colors. So I worked with Robert Kaufman with our Kona Solid to develop pre-cuts of both the warm and the cool sides of the palette. And then I based the book off of the pre-cut. So there was definitely a selection process where I was trying to give a wide range of colors based on what they have, and then develop the projects they work with those pre-cuts, both the sunrise and the sunset pre-cuts, and also with their brights and pastels palette. And for each project in the book, there's also digital versions of other color combinations that you could do if you wanted to experiment. The other thing I thought was important to include was, along with the palettes, where you kind of look like a painter's palette, you see all the colors that are included with the pre-cut, there are suggested backgrounds. You can definitely do your own thing, but there are also suggestions to kind of get you started. Because I really like seeing people kind of go out of their comfort zone. And I even talk about, you know, sometimes it's the colors you don't like that spur you on. Like, I don't like orange that much, and I laugh because it's in a lot of my work, because it's the color that leads your eye through the quilt and contrasts with the blues and greens that I'm drawn to. So I'm really interested in getting people to kind of work outside their comfort zone and discover something new.
You know, that is really fascinating, because pulling a color and sort of experimenting. I like to experiment. So, you know, pulling a color that you're not so fond of, but then finding things that go with it that you do love probably makes it explode.
Yes, very much so. And it makes it more exciting to the viewer. So, you know,
the quilt that I like, the little project that I like in the book that I think is, I've always been fascinated with is how you call it transparencies, which are they're placemats, so they're really easy to do, but they look like ribbons and they go with two colorways, like a blue green, and then it has lights and darks, so that the whole thing kind of shades. Does the chapter explain how to make that happen?
Yeah, it kind of talks about, you know, there's a bunch of things that happen with colors that are interesting. When you have two colors that are kind of close together in shade, they kind of blend to make a third color. So if you stood back from your quilt, you have a blue and green, they're kind of going to blend when you blur your eyes a little bit. Mm-hmm. But if you have two colors that are opposite on the color wheel, like an aqua and an orange, and one color is not significantly darker than the other, it kind of causes your eyes to, it almost oscillates, vibrates a little bit. And those types of phenomenon, you know, are so important when you're trying to design a quilt. So yeah, I talk a little bit about transparency. I talk a little bit about the vibrating effect. And I talk also about how colors are affected by their surroundings.
So how are colors affected by their surroundings? Can you give like an example?
Well, for instance, if you put a pink on an orange background or on a kind of lighter pink background, that pink might look different. The same thing with gray. It will have a different cast based on what's around it. You can even have two of the same color, exact same piece of fabric that look totally different. You know, you see that a lot with quilts that have dark sashing or light sashing. Mm-hmm. You have those same colors on a dark sashing or a light sashing, they're going to look different. And then there's the concept of neutral colors. I have the City Lights quilt in my book. It has all these very cool colors in it because it's made from the Sunset palette. Mm-hmm. And if those colors were on white or black, they might look bright, but instead I place them on a purple, and the purple would normally look bright on its own, but next to those other colors, it recedes, and it becomes the neutral. So, you know, the concept of what is neutral, a lot of times it depends on what's surrounding us. Like navy blue, we can get that to look like a neutral color when you put bright oranges and yellows on top of it.
That is so true. That is so true. I don't think I've ever heard it explained quite like that. That is really a great way to think about it. And you can just audition that yourself by laying a big piece of solid out and, you know, laying the different stuff on top. Do you teach? Do you go out and teach, Amanda?
Yes, I do teach. I teach a little bit as my family schedule permits, and I also mm-hmm. teach on Crafty. And so I teach an applique class on Crafty and some machine embroidery classes there. So I love actually teaching when I can because it's so exciting to see, you know, what people come up with. It actually, I learn a lot just from teaching. And sometimes I want to go back to one point. You know, when we were talking about color, trying it out, putting it up on your design wall, sometimes mm-hmm. color is, you know, people freak out because they're looking at it and they're looking for the solution right then. But it's one of those things, if you walk by it for a few days, mm-hmm. sometimes the solution comes to you because it's in your subconscious. It's, you know, you can't always think too hard about it mm-hmm. because there's no right or wrong answer.
I always tell people it's what your eye likes. You know, when you look at it, you might see it one way, I would see it a different way, but if I like it, then that's the right way.
Absolutely. Definitely.
So you like to blend modern, traditional. I mean, your fabric's very fresh. Your designs are very fresh. How do you approach your work when you're thinking that way?
Well, you're right. I like, it's just like an architecture. You know, you have a very traditional room and a piece of modern art. I think just I love blending different things. A lot of my colors are probably more modern in that they're brighter. I mean, mm-hmm. I always think you're making a quilt. You're not committing to painting your entire house red. You're making a quilt. You can make it all red if you want. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, I'm willing to take risks in the quilt design, but where the traditional versus modern comes in is if I have a fabric that is based on traditional motifs, like paisleys, like in the current APQ magazine, there's a pillow I did out of this fabric called Modern Lace, and it has a lot of traditional motifs, albeit mm-hmm. it has very modern colors. Then sometimes I want to take it and make it, put it in a more modern type of quilt. And so I'll push and pull because I love to mix things. I don't think there's rules for, you know, you have to necessarily make a reproduction quilt or you have right. to make something that's really modern.
Right.
I like to mix the two.
Yeah, and I love how you do it. You have a really nice way of approaching it. So people need to come see all of your stuff, Amanda. So,
Thank you.
Now, I want you to switch over because we have about a minute and a half left. I want to talk about your digital embroidery because you have some new ones.
Yes, I have a new embroidery collection with OESD coming out. Totally different for me because kind of masculine, which, you know, a lot of my fabrics are pretty feminine. And this was born out of some designs I did for fabric originally, and then it ended up in embroidery, so you never know where that will go. But it's called Kronos, and it's based off of gears and clocks and all that type of thing. And it's really fun. I can't wait for it to come out. And then also, I have a new collection I'll be designing for Benertex. That's a new announcement. Come spring market. So I have a new collection coming out with them as well. So that's also pretty fun. And the last thing is I'm doing three products with BNT Publishing this year. So I have a new book coming out this summer called the Free Motion Quilting Ideas Book. And then I have two other books or projects that I can't quite talk about yet coming out later in the year. So
you are a busy woman.
I think we all are. Don't you love that about the industry, though?
Yes, that's the best part. Keeps us going. And the clocks are fantastic.
Thank you.
Who love machine embroidery. So, Amanda, this has been so wonderful. Thank you for coming and joining me today.
Thank you for having me, Pat. Have a great day.
You too. Everybody can visit Amanda at AmandaMurphyDesign.com. We're going to take a little break and we'll be right back.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg. Join me in 2015 for a brand new video series called Show Me How, brought to you by Baby Lock. Each month, I'll show you how to complete a simple project from start to finish. Learn new techniques, see tips, and sew a great project. Visit allpeoplequilt.com/videos to watch.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and this broadcast is brought to you by Moda Fabrics. You can visit them at modabakeshop.com and get all kinds of really wonderful tips and tricks and pattern downloads. So when you see a book with the title of So Organized for the Busy Girl, you might be like me and you can't open it fast enough to see what the heck is going on in this book, because I think we're all busy and we all want to be organized. And so Heidi Staples is the author of this. She writes at fabricmutt.blogspot.com and I asked Heidi to come and tell me about her book. Thanks for being here, Heidi.
Thank you so much for having me.
I love this book. I love it. I love the title. I love the graphics. It's very retro, the graphics, which I love. But what made you come up with this idea of a book?
I'm so glad you like it. I love it. It turned out exactly the way I wanted it to be. I love all things vintage and retro. That's just the way I've always been. But the idea for the book came out, I think, just over blogging for the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. I'm a busy mom. I used to be a teacher, and now I'm a stay-at-home mom. I have three little girls. We bought a house with my parents 7 years ago. We all own this big house together with all these kids and dogs and crazy stuff happening all the time. And it's really hard to find time to sew. Mm-hmm. And the more I was blogging and meeting new people online across the country and all over the world, I'm not alone. There's tons of people out there who they want to sew and they don't have the time to do it. So I wanted to write a book for people like me who, you know, we want to have the chance to sew, but just having some ideas, things that you can pull out quickly that will help you do that, or just projects mm-hmm. when you really want to sew and you only have an hour, let's say, or 2 hours, you know, something that you can at least get started on and feel like you're getting something done.
So are you one of those people, Heidi, that's like born organized, or did you have to?
That would be a capital no. No, I am not organized. It's something I've really had to fight for. Honestly, it does not come naturally to me. I'm the girl with piles everywhere of mm-hmm. papers and fabric and stuff. And so, it's something I've really had to learn how to do. And it's not, I think that's one of the things in my book, you know, you're not going to find anything magical, flashy in there. It's a lot of really simple things. But it's things that if you take the time to sit down and do them, it really does make a difference. And I think one of the things I learned, it's not something that you're either born with or you're not born with. It's just sometimes starting to do things that when they all add up, make you a more organized person.
So when you went to lay out the sections, uh-huh. you know, and you've been talking online with other people and all of that, but did you have a plan, or did you sort of poll people? How did you get the sort of the flow of the book organized?
You know, I kind of, it's a different sort of book, I guess, in a way, because I didn't want it to be a book where I was teaching people how to sew, because mm-hmm. I feel like for me, that would be reinventing the wheel. There's so many books out there to teach you how to sew, and they're going to do it better than I could have, or I would just be repackaging what they already had. So mm-hmm. I give you a lot of links if you want to know how to sew. But I wanted to include some chapters on how to come up with more time to sew. Mm-hmm. And so ways to organize your sewing room, ways to organize your stuff, ways to schedule, to work with if you have a family, mm-hmm. you know, if you have a career and you're trying to do this on the side, you know, what are some things? So I have a couple chapters that are just on here's how to come up with more time to sew, and here are little things that you can do to make it easier. And then mm-hmm. I have a couple chapters filled with projects that you can use when you do have time to sew.
Well, tell me a little bit about this section, which is probably, I'm just guessing, might be near yeah. and dear to your heart, which is kids and the sewing room. Since you
yes.
have a house full, you have a house full of people, you have a lot of, you know, little people also in the mix.
Yes.
What can you give me a few tips from that
yeah.
section?
Yeah, when I started sewing, my daughters were 1, 2, and 4 years old.
Oh my!
And so it was really hard. And you know, now they're older. Now they're 4, 5, and my oldest is going to be 8 this week. So there's, you know, things change, but there's still, you know, the sewing room is full of everything that we don't want them to go near. Everything is hot and sharp and, you know, we don't want their fingerprints on it. So it's hard because when you're a mom and you have all these little ones, you know, what do? You can't just go, you know, shut them in a room somewhere and then go sew. So I was trying to find ways that I could have my girls in the room with me. And there's a lot of neat ideas. And if you talk to bloggers, and there are some ideas from other friends of mine in the book also who are bloggers. Mm-hmm. There's some neat things that people are doing. You can, my girls love to sort scraps for me. My oldest was just doing it for me last night. So she'll go through my scrap bin, and I have little bins that are sorted by color. Mm-hmm. And so she'll take the scrap bin and just sort them all the colors into the different color bins. My youngest loves to pass me clover clips when I'm sewing. And she loves to have me pass the clover clips to her to put in my little vintage measuring cup that I keep them in. So there's some moms who have their kids design quilts with fabric and pretend to design their own quilts. My girls like to play fabric shop with my fabric. You know, there's all these little things that you can do, and they can have their own area kind of off to the side and stay busy with mm-hmm. those things and still kind of feel involved, which is fun.
So I just had like a side thought on that, mm-hmm. which is really sort of outside of the book. But
yeah.
do you take your children with you when you go fabric shopping in a store?
I do sometimes. Mm-hmm. In fact, I just was at my local quilt shop this morning and they came with me. And, you know, today I needed to talk with the owner for a little bit because I have a book signing coming up next month. And so I had them bring their leap pads with to keep them busy. But yeah. My oldest daughter did not want to play with her leap pad. She wanted to go around and look at the fabric. So they're really very interested in what I do. They're very excited about what I do. And I mm-hmm. kind of like that. You know, this isn't just a part of my life that I keep shut off from them. They really are a part of it and they are really excited about it.
Yeah, I was talking with another designer who recently, and she was talking about her kids playing tag through the rows of the store.
Yes. Mine would probably do that if I let them. But
yeah.
No, but they love fabric. They love sewing. You know, my oldest is begging for a sewing machine, you know, that kind of thing. So they get very excited about it.
So let's talk about one of the projects in the book, because I really love the butterfly quilt.
Oh, I love that one too.
Yeah, I like how it has like a 3D effect and it has some neat fabric in it. Can you tell me a little bit about that one and why you included it?
You know what? I get a lot of my ideas looking at traditional quilt blocks when I do quilting. I'm probably more of a small project person than I am. I do quilts too. I mean, I do both, but I mm-hmm. probably at this point am doing more, you know, cases and pouches and different kinds of things. When I do quilts, a lot of times I like to look at traditional quilt blocks and books mm-hmm. of traditional quilt blocks and see how I can kind of pull them apart and change them around a little bit mm-hmm. or make them scrappy and add little pieces to it. And so that block is, I believe, from the 1930s, I think. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the name of it, but I was looking at the block and I thought, wow, if you took this block and you kind of moved things around and pulled it apart a little and put something in the middle, it kind of looks like a butterfly.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. And I love using text fabrics in my projects and I love putting things in rainbow order. So I had a lot of fun with that one, kind of using different shades of the same colors on each of the wings and putting text fabric in the middle of each one. It was a really fun project.
Yeah, they look like 3D boxes, the wings, but you definitely see the butterfly. It's just
it almost has an origami look to it.
Yeah,
which I really like.
Yeah, it is. You have a very effective use of your fabric for that one.
Oh, thank you.
I'm really intrigued by it because that takes some thinking. You know, if you don't put your fabrics the right way, if you don't color them, just like Amanda Murphy and I were just talking, you know, there's a coloration thing. Does that sort of just come to you or did you have to play around with that?
It just depends. You know, it depends on what I'm doing. I play around. I love the planning stage. It's my favorite stage always. And I sit there forever, you know, and look through the fabrics. It's got to be the right one. If I don't like it, I have to walk away from it because mm-hmm. I'm not going to like it more once it's all sewed up and then I have to rip it apart. So,
right.
So it's really fun to, I love to play with the different things. I really like to work in things like text fabric and mm-hmm. things that are interesting like that because I think I love the look of Japanese quilting and projects. They have such a wonderful way of utilizing different kinds of fabric that you wouldn't expect, traditional and more modern. And so I like to play around with a lot of different things.
So being that your book's on organization, mm-hmm. I know that I asked you to take a look out on allpeoplequilt.com, which is American Patchwork's website. And did you find any good things out there you could tell people to check out?
I did. Look at the organizational section. I love unconventional storage ideas. Mm-hmm. So I love putting things in candy jars and vintage dishes and, you know, putting your supplies in spice racks and card catalog files. I have an old photo file that I have all kinds of crazy things in my sewing room. I have an old kind of card catalog-like photo drawer thing that I put larger fabric scraps in. And I love using old dishes. My grandmother passed away this last year, and I have a bunch of her jadeite cups and containers and stuff. I keep my fabric and thread in there. And, oh, it's so fun. It's so pretty. And it makes it a really fun place to sew. So I love doing things like that. Really good ideas on there.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Everybody have to go out there and check them out. let's talk about what you do online, because that's where, you know, you live a lot. Is that your website? One of the things I noticed was a section that you do frequently called Sew the Library at your website. What is that about?
That's a new thing we're doing this year. I'm obsessed with sewing books. I collect probably more than I should. Our Amazon packages keep coming, and my husband keeps shaking his head.
But, join the club.
I just love sewing books. They're so fun to look at, but I'm terrible about sewing from them. I look at them, and then it goes on the shelf, and I get busy, and I forget to make something from it. So I have all these books, and I did a project from one in December, and I called it Sew the Library, and several people said, this is such a good idea. Can you do a monthly link up, and we can all sew something from our libraries? So the 20th of each month, we're trying it for 3 months, and we'll see if people link up, we'll keep it going. Mm-hmm. A couple friends and I are doing this. The 20th of each month, we have a link up, and it runs to the end of the month. There's no prizes, there's no contest. It's just we're doing our thing. And make something either from a sewing book or a sewing magazine that you have in your library, and do a blog post or a photo on Flickr and link it up on our blog. I did the link up this month, and this next month it's Martha at Weekend Doings. She's having the link up. It's on my blog. You can find it there if you're looking for it.
Yay. That just sounds wonderful. It's like the motivation thing, you know?
Yeah. It's good. You know, we have all this good stuff. We got to use it, you know?
We do. What else do you normally share about at your site?
I really am big on how does my sewing fit into real life. Mm-hmm. So I don't consider myself a big artistic expert, you know, like some of the people out there. I'm just a girl who loves to sew, and I love to make stuff for the people I love, and I love to share it with everybody who is kind enough to come by and look at it. So I just, I like to, you know, I sew for my three girls, and I sew stuff for friends, and I get to do stuff for some fabric companies like Riley Blake and Birch Fabrics. They're wonderful about letting me do stuff for them. And whatever I make, I like to share. I share a lot on Instagram. You can find me a lot on Instagram, too. And I'm Fabric Mutt everywhere except for Facebook, because I had to draw the line somewhere and I can't keep up with it all. But I have a lot of fun. You know, people are so kind. The community out there is just, you know, people are so encouraging. So it really, it's a great thing when we can all encourage each other to do this thing that we love and have fun doing it together.
And you have some wonderful tutorials. You pointed me to the bag called Ellie's Travel Case.
Yes.
So people can go there and find that. It's awesome.
Thank you. I love writing those. They're a lot of fun.
You know, this, Heidi, has been so great to get a chance to get to know you a little better, hear about your book, which should be in the stores pretty soon, right?
Yes. It's supposed to be out through C&T in March. So next month.
Okay. Next month, just a few days, called the So Organized for the Busy Girl. Thank you once again.
Thank you so much, Pat.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about free motion quilting, because we can never talk about that enough. We'll be back.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg, executive editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making pillowcases and creating smiles. For people who love to sew or quilt, it's so easy to lift spirits and bring smiles to hospitalized kids, homeless families, and others in need. Simply join American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine's 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. Make one, two, or more pillowcases and donate them in your local community. You'll create just as many smiles. Join the movement today. Find complete details, download free patterns, and record your donations online at allpeoplequilt.com/million pillowcases.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and free motion quilting. I promise you, I cannot talk about this enough with enough different people. And the more you hear and the more you try, you're going to be making and quilting your own quilts. So Molly Hansen is a contributor to the family of magazines for American Patchwork, and she is an author. Her book is called Free Motion Quilting for Beginners and Those Who Think They Can't. I just love that sub tagline. Molly, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
That just cracks me up because how many times do people tell you, oh, I can't do that, right?
Oh, yeah. We hear that all the time.
Right. So when did you quilt your first quilt?
I started quilting about 4 years ago now, and free motion quilting anyways. I've been quilting for about 10 years. And I didn't actually start on a quilt. I started on some practice squares and some small projects and worked my way up to a quilt. So I don't think I was on my first quilt till probably a few months after I began. So I kind of worked my way up there. But
so it sounds like you sort of made a plan. You were going to learn how to do this, and you tackled it in little pieces to get yourself to a bigger project.
That's just what worked for me. Yeah, I had done enough research and followed enough free motion quilters to know that, you know, big quilts are a challenge on a domestic machine. And I just figured rather than setting myself up for failure, I'd try to set myself up for success and start on something small.
I can remember when I had that sort of light bulb, when I was quilting and finally, like, by whatever quilt it was, 3, 4, 5, I finally went like, oh, this doesn't look too bad. Can you remember that feeling when you were first getting it?
Yeah, I can actually. I actually will say the first time I tried free motion quilting, I started with stippling, and it didn't work very well for me. It was just too random, too foreign, something I hadn't drawn a lot of, and so it just was too much to manage to think about the design and to try to think about all the things with quilting. And so from there, I quickly moved to just trying to quilt things that I knew I could draw well, like daisies and my name, like just cursive writing. And right about then I realized, oh, wow, if I'm comfortable drawing it, I'm pretty good at quilting it. And so that was a real light bulb moment for me to know where to go to get better. And so I really then started going heavy into drawing all my quilting designs a lot and noticed vast improvement really quickly. So that was kind of my light bulb moment.
Oh, that is fascinating. Now, you talk about the sketching in your book.
I do. It's so important.
Can you just sort of go into that a bit? Because I think a lot of people don't even know how important it is to sketch.
It is. I'd say it goes hand in hand with good free motion quilting. If you want to get good at free motion quilting and you don't want to spend every waking minute of your life practicing on your machine, then get a sketchbook and a Sharpie and go for it and bring it with you and make it your best friend and use it everywhere. When you're on hold, when you're waiting in the car, draw your free motion quilting designs. And it is just amazing how that relationship with the pen and paper translates to fabric and thread, because when you're not thinking about how to make the design and all you have to think about is how to quilt it, all of the hardships of that design just go out the window. And so I really feel like that's the secret to learning quickly anyways. So.
Yeah. Then I think it's a mind memory thing. That's what I tell people. It's like, if you draw it enough, then when you sit down with the machine, it sort of clicks. It's not like
your
the
brain
first
knows
time.
What to do. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It becomes much more like just, you know, natural, like sewing straight lines, which we're all used to with quilting.
Right. And a lot of people do, there are people who do curves really easily and people who do straight things more easily. So you have those in your book, right?
Well, yeah, because I think with everybody having their own strengths, I wanted to be able to appeal to everyone, although I am not good at straight lines. I can't draw a straight line, and I certainly can't quote one. And so, you know, even in my book, I think you'll see that, you know, certain designs work better for me than others. But I feel like, you know, to reach everybody, you need to be able to have all of that in the book. So, yeah.
So your book is laid out that you have a lot of almost like little lesson plans. So mm-hmm. you might have like the square meander, and then you use it on something, and you have a paisley, and you show people how to draw that. So it's got like little parts, and then you have a project, which are all mm-hmm. small projects.
Yeah. Yeah. I really feel like that's how it worked for me to learn mm-hmm. on small projects, but actually quilting on wheel quilted items, because mm-hmm. if you only stick to a practice square, it's like practicing in a parking, learning to drive in a parking lot. I mean, it's a perfect controlled scenario every time. And so if you don't know what it feels like to get over a bumpy seam or, you know, have some fabric shift because of piecing, then that experience isn't going to translate when it's time, you know, to quilt a real quilt. So I feel like by you know, tackling small quilted projects, you know, you're enhancing what you've learned, and you're also doing your best work because you've made something. It's not just a practice square. And that's the other thing is practice squares are throwaway so often. And so I think why not, you know, make use of them. You can turn them into things, small projects, or you can start with a fancier practice square and piece a little something and then, you know, get that experience and then turn it into something. So that's kind of the way my thinking was with the book.
No, I like that idea a lot because – you know, having a use for what you made. A lot of people have to have a use, even if it's mm-hmm. not, you know, even if it's a practice square, like, well, what will I use this for? So
right.
you have little tote bags and laptop sleeves and little purses, which are all yeah. great uses for those squares. Tell me about the section called print tracking, print mm-hmm. as in fabric print. So you have these beautiful florals, geometrics. Tell me how you yeah. explain to use those.
Well, print tracking is basically just like it sounds. You just follow the outlines of a print or certain outlines of a print. If it's a very, very detailed one, you can choose to do just certain petals in the flower and, you know, leave certain details out. But when you're letting the fabric be the design, that's a really great way to practice this free motion quilting because instead of having to focus on making these designs look perfect, you're just following a line and getting comfortable with moving in all sorts of different directions. And the outcome is just really beautiful to have fabric enhanced that way. So it's kind of a win-win. It's a great technique to really highlight your favorite fabrics and mm-hmm. Make them look their best, really. So it's a lot of fun.
I love the piece that's like a hexagon mm-hmm. fabric that you went around because it just makes that pop. It's so
yeah,
cool.
I had so much fun with that. I was so pleased when it turned out that way.
Yeah, it is great. It is really, really great. So what is one of the big things people tell you about learning to free motion that you can sort of get them over that hurdle?
The biggest thing I hear is that people are afraid to ruin their quilt top by practicing mm-hmm. free motion quilting on it. And like we just said, you know, you just have got to be willing to take the leap. And mm-hmm. so I always tell people, if you don't have a quilt top that's, you know, not so precious that you're afraid to ruin it, then make a simple one. You know, just mm-hmm. do something simple. But you need to get that experience to actually quilt on real quilts. And, you know, while I don't recommend starting on a big quilt, I'd say, mm-hmm. you know, within your first couple of months of quilting, you need to move there. So it just is something right. that you just have to tackle it small, get comfortable, and keep increasing the size of the things you're working on. Because it is a totally different ball game when you're feeling the drag and weight of a big quilt and, mm-hmm. and how you're going to manage that. So I really think that if it's something you have a desire to learn, you just have got to be a little bit fearless. And, you know, none of us would be quilters if we weren't fearless in the beginning enough to try piecing. So
that's
nobody
true.
Wants to be a beginner, but you have to start somewhere. So, you know, everything everything you learn is a small success, and you got to celebrate that, you know, and not be too critical on yourself. And no, it's a hard skill to master. So.
Right, right. Nobody sits down. It's a very rare person that sits down and starts to free motion and it looks great. I mean, it's yeah. just not a skill set. I mean, it's just like most people don't get in a car. It's always a good analogy. You know, you don't get in a car and drive perfectly the first time.
It's just counterintuitive. And so, you know, it's one of those things that once you get the feel of it, you can get it going pretty easy, but
you just have to learn it first, mm-hmm. learn how to move that fabric and how that all works. And it's just a little foreign when you start off. So everything feels a little weird.
Right.
So just only experience teaches you how to manage that. So
I want you to tell me, to switch gears here for a second, you have a quilt of yours in the Quilts and More issue that's out right now in February 2015. So it's got keys on it. Tell me about mm-hmm. this quilt.
Well, I was approached to make that quilt actually by RJR Fabrics mm-hmm. For Quilt Market last fall. And they wanted to promote their 40 new solid colors that they had added to their solid collection. Mm-hmm. And so my challenge was to use all 40 colors in one quilt. And so I came to the keys when I was just thinking I wanted to do like a Warhol type quilt where, you know, you're showing a repeat image in different color combinations. Mm-hmm. I just thought that would be a really fun way to do it. And I came to the key when I realized that color was the key to my heart. And so I thought, what better thing than to put a key on there?
That's
perfect. I just thought it was an image people could relate to and would think was fun. So.
Well, I think I may have told you that my grandfather made keys as one of his many jobs, and so he had boxes of them from that time frame, and the actual front door key for their home that I remember from my childhood was a skeleton key like these.
That's so fun.
I know. I mean, I didn't. You know, you think about it, like, oh, nobody used keys like that. It's like, well, no, they had that. I have to make some of those blocks because they are so cool.
Well,
and how
that.
Did, now that we're talking about free motion, how did you quilt that particular one?
I did swirls in the background of that quilt, but then at the intersection of each block, I decided I wanted to make it a little more special. And so I kind of did a freehand keyhole in each corner and then did some pebbling and a little border around that. So if you look close, you'll see that there are keyholes in the intersections of all the blocks. And that was just kind of a fun way to... enhance the theme with my quilting, so which is something I really like to do. So.
Yeah, it is a great, great quilt. So tell me where people can find you.
I blog at sowrongsoright.blogspot.com, and I, of course, have my book, Free Motion Quilting for Beginners, and I have a Facebook like page called Free Motion Quilting for Beginners, too. So
wonderful. Molly, this has been so great. Thank you for chatting with me.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Visit us at allpeoplequilt.com. Sign up for our newsletter. I am Pat Sloan, and I have a site, patsloan.com, where I have a newsletter. We all have Facebook pages where there's lots of fun activities, so I hope you come and join us there. And next week, I will be back with a whole new set of guests, and we'll be talking about interesting topics. If you have a guest you'd like to have on the show, you can write me at pat@patsloan.com, and I will check them out, and maybe we'll have your favorites on the show in the near future.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening.